This is a summary of some soil health work we did with bioenergy or biofuel crops, and that was completed a couple of years ago, but we're just there's so much data we're just finally getting around to reporting it. We have this biofuel production based on grain, ethanol, or biodiesel, plus the crop residues, cellulosic ethanol. And a lot of these crops are rather novel, and the long-term influence of the biomass removal and soil fertility on soil health is really not known. And I'm not going to go through another definition of soil health. I'm sure you've seen plenty of this already today. But I have parenthetically there, maybe we should put in capable of supporting biofuel crops as well. I guess if the renewable fuel standard stays as it is, that might be a possibility. And I also want to throw in a couple of other soil health definitions. Nothing personal, Doug, but some of the definitions from Australia and in the UK are rather thorough, and I'll just bring that to your attention. So the objectives of this particular study is fairly large. The first one was from a soil fertility standpoint, again, about coming up with the nutrient management practices for the environmentally safe and economically viable for biofuel. And then the second one, the one that I'm going to focus on, is to evaluate the long-term effects of these types of crops on soil health. So it's very complex. It's in two sites in Missouri. These plots were established in 2008. It's on, again, this Mexico silt loam soil, and that's not after the country of Mexico. It's from a town in Missouri, which is, again, this clay pan soil has an argillic subsurface horizon in it. And we looked at these annual systems with corn and soybeans, sweet sorghum double crop following wheat, and these were planted and managed using conventional practices. And then what I call the perennial systems were included miscanthus, switchgrass, and tall fescue as kind of a temperate crop control. Then these plots were split again for different fertility programs that were imposed on that after soil testing after the each year. So it turns out to be an 8x3 factorial. Soils were sampled in the fall. And then the measurements included standard soil test parameters, carbon, nitrogen, aggregate stability. We used a dehydrogenase enzyme activity for general soil microbial activity, and we chose a glucosaminidase enzyme to kind of give an indication of carbon and nitrogen cycling functional activity. And we didn't have the phospholipid fatty acid system going at that time, so that was not run on these plots or on these soils. So again, continuous corn for grain, continuous corn grain plus residue removal. Then we had two different entries of corn soybean or soybean corn. Both of those were harvested for grain as if you were going to use it for grain ethanol. Sweet sorghum for the residue, miscanthus, switchgrass, and tall fescue as residue biomass. So this was harvested as if one would harvest it for those particular reasons. Standard soil tests at each site were fairly similar, the same soil at each site, as you can see here. And so that served as the basis of the fertility program. Then after each harvest, the soils were sampled, and then it was determined for whether the fertilizer recommendations were going to be based on annual crop removal rates and build up, or if the soil test and lime recommendation was going to be for just 1 year of phosphorus and potassium buildup, or if there was no P and K added. So I'm not going to report on that. What we for this presentation we averaged over those treatments, and because it really there wasn't a whole lot of difference in most of it from that standpoint, and then we just report these soil health indicator values across all these treatments for the four-year study. Okay. Now, so here's the problem. You see this, and you're going to be overwhelmed, hopefully not too bad. But Each of these clusters of bars is for each year. We've got organic carbon here and total nitrogen down here. Probably not going to see a whole lot of difference, but what I want to point out is that, you know, the first 3 years of the study we're seeing some impact, and then what happened? 2012 is the drought year. Okay, so we have some influence on that. I'm splitting the annual systems from the perennial, kind of give you a guide here, and giving the significant difference or the higher value for those systems that at the end of the four-year period showed some improvement in the particular measurement. So as you can see here for Miscanthus, after 4 years, we got a slight increase in carbon for the perennial systems. For the annual systems, the ones that showed fairly good resilience after 4 years was the wheat double crop sweet sorghum. And I think, you know, you probably expect that. The rest of these are row crop systems. This one has a little bit longer term vegetation during the entire year. And we see the same system with the total nitrogen values there. So that, you know, I think that data is fairly what you'd expect, nothing really, really surprising there. When we looked at aggregate stability, we're seeing a trend here again. Increase over the four-year period with almost all of these, but then again, the highest aggregate stability after the four-year period associated with the wheat, sweet sorghum, and not necessarily Miscanthus. We have switchgrass. These two are fairly comparable in that respect. Again, the aggregate stability maintained fairly level or fairly consistent pattern with the row crop systems. The dehydrogenase or the microbial activity, now we're beginning to see some impact of rotations with the sweet sorghum and the wheat double crop, a little bit longer persistence of the root systems in the soil during that four-year trial. And then with the perennial systems, we have higher aggregate stability with Miscanthus for this particular parameter as well. Now if we look at the glucosaminidase again, remember this is represents both nitrogen and carbon cycling, not necessarily total microbial activity. That's because these are extracellular enzymes and they can be there most of the time without the living biomass actually being alive, you know. And we're seeing again this kind of built up over the 4 year period, and with the double crop system here again showing the higher activity for the function of the microbial biomass. Switchgrass really showed up higher the final year. Miscanthus was right behind it, and really even tall fescue was for all years except when the drought hit. Then it didn't rebound in that fourth year when we finalized the sampling for this particular study. So, you know, what do we conclude from this? And I think, you know, what we found out of this was fairly anticipated, I'd say. You know, the cumulative cropping on these cropping effects on these soil indicators are infected by environmental conditions. You know, we had the 2012, the drought year. It was very very dry, and when some of those soils are dry, you really don't have a lot of microbial activity going on. They're dormant, but at the same time, the soluble carbon is not being moved either because you don't have any moisture to move it along. No water films. That carbon's going to be built up because it's not being decomposed. So we can see that the carbon and nitrogen would increase with the perennial biomass cropping systems and with this wheat sorghum double crop among the annual cropping systems. With aggregate stability, because it's related to the amount of carbon and microbial activity, we see the same thing. Increase with perennial biomass cropping is particularly with the miscanthus, and again with this wheat sorghum double crop. With dehydrogenase, we have increased in the perennial biomass cropping and wheat sorghum double crop plus soybean corn rotation among the annual cropping systems. And then with the glucosaminidase, again, the similar pattern. The perennial biomass cropping systems, you know, these are maintained throughout the year, root systems in the soil. And the wheat sorghum double crop is the greatest increase. And again, I think it's because we have the soil being occupied by living root systems across that normally fallow period after harvest in the fall. We have the wheat in there. And to support this or confirm this, a lot of information is starting to come out now about the characteristics of these candidate biomass crops that contribute to maintaining soil health. And so you look at the literature, and you'll notice a lot of this is just coming out. You know, look at all the 2017 citations there, that with these perennial biomass crops, they're very high nutrient use efficiency, low soil removal, and the same way with the sweet sorghum is this way as well. And these other researchers have shown that. And, you know, if you think about these miscanthus, which is not necessarily a native, obviously, but switchgrass being a native warm season grass, these often associate with asymbiotic nitrogen-fixing bacteria. And so they're not really probably removing as much mineral in from the soil as, say, something like a corn and tall fescue would be. Also, if you look at organic carbon and microbial carbon is maintained or improved under perennial crops, including miscanthus, relative to annual crops, so you have more of a sustained release of carbon and nitrogen from the roots of these perennial into the soil, because again, they especially with miscanthus, they establish a really dense root system. You get into switchgrass and some of these other native warm season grasses, their root systems are very dense and very deep. They go, especially, remember, this is a clay pan soil. Some of these warm season grasses were native to this region and they've penetrated the clay pan, whereas corn and sorghum really do not. They haven't developed the ability to do that. Soil aggregation is improved and is maintained by perennial grasses. This is fairly common reason. And the microbial structure and function tend to improve with established grass. So whereas an annual crop, we keep removing the stover and the grain and have to start all over the next season, it has an effect on microbial structure, especially if you're not rotating in new annual crops every year. Okay, so with this, what would be the other future studies? Well, one site was all these crops are still maintained; they're established. So now that we have the phospholipid fatty acid system up and running, it would be there's a plan to go ahead and go back in and see what we have after the 4 years of crop. Of course, now it's more like 8 years establishment. We also want to document the carbon storage and nitrogen retention within the soil profile. And just to give you an idea of why we want to do that, here is a warm season grass going to 70 or 80 centimeters deep. And if you can see this whitish area here, this is the argillic horizon. You see this warm season grass, and this is actually Indian grass. It's not switchgrass, but it serves the same purpose. You see the root density here that we have down to the at least the 60 centimeter or so depth that are penetrating the soil. What they're doing is they're delivering carbon, feeding the microbial community, and at the same time maybe releasing carbon there that is being stored at depth. In contrast, look at the maize root here in this soil. You know, I think this is one of the reasons why we see some of the differences in the soil health indicators that we found. This particular rooting depth is maybe to 20 centimeters, and then you have a few roots that will follow down to about 40 or so. But then you look below here, there's no roots at all. It's a harsh soil. It probably should be remaining in prairie vegetation, but you don't want to tell the landowners that. But most of the activity is up here in the very upper surface of the A horizon. And so these are some of the things that we still want to do, and I think it gives you an idea of the factors that we got to keep in mind when we switch over to some of these bioenergy production systems. Soil is key, and environment is as well.
Okay. Thanks, Bob.